This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. If you're a woman and you've ever asked for a raise, it probably sounded a little something like this.
In the late 80s, a law school classmate of mine and I were at the same firm, and I found out that he was earning substantially more than I was.
I had had the same position for 7 years, and I had went to my boss one day and told him I needed a raise, I needed a promotion.
I was a paralegal at a law firm for 12 years, and I worked overtime for many, many years and did not get any overtime pay.
As an independent contractor, it's always been hard for me to ask for money.
I waited a few weeks, nothing happened, so I went to his supervisor and waited a few weeks and never heard back.
I went to the partnership to ask for an equity increase.
He said, paralegals aren't entitled to that much money.
And I asked for a pay increase, and they said, oh, no, sorry, we can't give that to you.
I ended up going to the owners of the company. Within about 5 days, I was given a raise and a promotion.
I applied for a different position and got it, and it had a higher salary. And then I asked for a counteroffer, which I also got.
And I was the first person and a woman at this company to make that happen.
We're pursuing an administrative audit of salaries to ensure that female teachers' salaries have not been undercut by the structural pay inequality outcomes of the past century.
They can't find the money to give me not even 1% pay rate.
Well, for all the leaning in we do, women still made 82 cents on the dollar in 2017 on average, and women of color do even worse. But getting companies to be transparent about what and how they pay their employees has been a challenge until now. Last week, a federal judge ruled that the Trump administration must comply with an Obama-era rule that requires companies with 100 or more employees to send that pay data to the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission. The big question now is, will better data lead to better and more fair pay? Well, here to talk about this with us is Rebecca Greenfield, reporter for Bloomberg covering gender, race, and class, and host of the Paycheck Podcast. Rebecca, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
We also have Emily Martin, the Vice President for Education and Workplace Justice at the National Women's Law Center, and her organization was part of the lawsuit that sued the Trump administration to reinstate the rule. Emily, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So, Emily, let's start with you. Why was your organization pushing for companies to report the data?
Well, we think this is a critical initiative for a couple reasons. First, if you are required to provide this pay data to the EEOC annually, that means you have to look at it. That means the company is measuring and monitoring race and gender wage gaps. And if you're giving this data over to the EEOC, which is the agency that's responsible for enforcing pay discrimination laws, you're pretty motivated to make sure that if there is a wage gap, that there's a good reason for it. And if there's no good reason, you're motivated to fix it. It's also really important because pay discrimination is a hard problem to fix because of the culture of secrecy that surrounds pay. So many people are paid less. Many women are paid less than their male counterparts and have no idea because you just don't talk about that at work. And this helps fix that problem by giving the EEOC a window into companies' pay practices.
So I want to turn to you now, Rebecca. I reported on this when it first was announced that there were some questions about whether or not this increased transparency would actually have an impact on wages. Some small business owners were saying that's not the case. It's hard to tell. What's your take on that?
So business owners always push back on this kind of thing. They say it's onerous. They say it's going to cost them money. It will cost them some money. How much is a little unclear. And I think there is an idea that transparency, you know, is the best disinfectant. There has been limited research showing that, but there is some promising research that when this kind of government reporting happens, that the pay gap can decrease. We saw that with a recent study that came out this year that was kind of a first of its kind that showed the companies there who have to report, it helps close the pay gap by a decrease of about 7%. So it can work when you do have the data to know what's going wrong, that some companies might start to fix it.
Part of the problem here also, and Emily, I'm curious to get your thoughts, and part of the reason why we're even doing this segment is because there's been a lot of talk about women not asking, right? That we don't even ask for the money, that we don't ask for the raises. And we just heard at the top of the show, we heard a montage of all these women who asked with mixed results. Some got it, some didn't, although represented some sort of a struggle to get there. Emily, is it that women aren't asking?
You know, there's some new studies out that show actually women ask as often as men when they're in the same type of job, but women are less likely to get raises when they ask for them. Supervisors often have either unconscious or conscious biases that lead them to react less well when women are seen as difficult, while men are seen as being go-getters in these situations. So it's not as simple as fixing the women. We really have to address the ways in which pay is set and the stereotypes and the biases that can infect pay setting, even if employers don't realize it.
And what's your take on that, Rebecca? Because the U.S. Chamber of Commerce actually did also push back on this rule. And as we said, the business community has said, you know, this is burdensome for them. But does this really help give power to women who are asking for the money and just not getting it?
I mean, this specific initiative is not going to be the cure-all either, because it's just a start. It's just companies having to report to the government. Still, individual women and companies aren't going to have the information that they might need to ask for raises, but there are pushes for that. And this is one small step toward just the idea of more information, the idea of more transparency, which here in the U.S. especially is just not where things have been going in discussions about pay equality.
And can you tell us a little bit about the Chamber of Commerce pushback generally? What were their concerns there?
Yeah, so this is asking companies to give more information than they have been giving before on these EO1 forms. And it is quite a bit more information. And companies are saying that that's going to cost them a lot of money to do that. And, you know, they don't want more red tape and more bureaucracy, which is an argument we hear a lot from companies and all types of regulations. The estimate that the EEOC is giving for how much it will cost them is much less than they're saying how much it will cost them. That's what they're saying the pushback is. I also think that this is just something companies don't want to report or admit. And we've seen this in a couple of ways. Anytime companies have been asked to say what their pay gaps are, they push back. And it's because the numbers can be embarrassing. If they're breaking the laws intentionally or not, they can get sued. So I think there are just these fears that companies have when giving up their data.
Emily, you've seen these disparities in pay data. So these things are real, Emily. What's the concern? How can we actually make this effective?
So I agree with one thing Rebecca said, which is that this pay data initiative is really important, but it's not the whole solution. This is a step towards greater transparency around pay. Greater transparency around pay is a really important cultural shift that we're in the midst of that gives employees more information, more power in the workplace. There are also important efforts going on in a lot of states and also in Congress to strengthen our equal pay laws. So, for example, to make quite clear that employers can't set your pay based on what you made in your last job, because that can allow pay discrimination to follow women and people of color through their whole careers. So this is a piece of a larger culture shift around pay and a real new energy around these questions of equity that I think is exciting. This is the beginning and not the end of those changes.
And I'm wondering also, the Trump administration, Emily, blocked this rule. It's now been overruled. But do we think that the EEOC is actually going to use this information?
I think so. There was a lot of work that went into this rule at the EEOC. And I believe that there are many, many people at the EEOC who are excited to use this tool if it is made available to them. So I am really optimistic that collecting this pay data is going to allow a whole new level of enforcement of our equal pay laws that's quite overdue.
Rebecca and Emily, I'll open this up to you as well. And I tweeted about this yesterday. Ellen Pao tweeted about how she had asked for more money and she was, criticized for it. And I said, it's not that we're not asking. It's that we almost get in trouble when we do. So I guess the question is, for me and for a lot of other women who we heard at the beginning of the show, from our experiences, asking for money is often something that we get a negative response to or we're penalized for. Is there a good way that that should be handled?
Yeah, so, you mentioned that we're now getting the message that women are asking more, but they're not getting as much. And I don't think women should take away from that you shouldn't ask for raises. The studies have found that still some women are getting when they're asking. So women should be asking for raises because if you don't ask, you're not going to get it. But what the studies are also finding is that when women are penalized basically when they really go against the gender stereotypes, that when women act—
when we don't ask nicely?
Yeah. So when you're acting more like a man, that's when you get penalized more. I mean, there are all sorts of coaching sites and ways to learn how to, quote, negotiate better as a woman. I don't think that is the solution to this whole gender pay gap problem. But if you are an individual woman, it does, behoove you to look up some of these best practices because it can help you when you're in this really tricky situation.
That's frustrating. Emily, we've got about a minute left. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that. Do I have to learn how to negotiate better like a woman? Or does the industry have to understand that we can ask for equal pay if we deserve it?
Well, there's definitely some data out which says obnoxious things, like you're more likely to be successful if you smile when you ask for a raise.
I'm smiling right now, just so you
yeah.
know.
So that should help. But I also think that the more that women do ask, the more this is normalized. People's gender expectations shift over time. And so we are all part of the process of shifting those expectations about what is normal and appropriate behavior for a woman. So asking is an important part of that process.
And maybe we don't always have to be nice when we ask. Rebecca Greenfield is a reporter for Bloomberg covering gender, race, and class and the host of the Paycheck podcast. And Emily Martin is the vice president for education and workplace justice at the National Women's Law Center. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.